You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, welcome back to Waveform, episode 2 of 2020. We are back. It's 2 days later. We are in the midst of CES as we record this, but we'll also have a little bit of a wrap-up. But we're kind of in the thick of seeing the future right now, and I'm joined by my co-host, Andrew.
Yep.
And with our guest today, which is Mr. Austin Evans.
Hey, guys. This is Austin.
Oh, that was crisp.
Needed it.
I'm so glad we have a clean recording of you saying that. Welcome to Waveform.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
So you just got to CES.
Yeah.
You made the smart decision. I've been here for days and I'm about done with technology. I think I'm going back to the Stone Age now.
I love that this is where we're starting. This is CES. Okay, so this, just for context, I had to look it up. This is my 8th CES. This is your
9th.
9th CES.
Ninth.
Okay, and this, Andrew, which?
3rd.
3rd CES. Yeah. So I'd say after about 3, you start to lose hope. for how much you think you can get done or what you think you can make out of CES, and it starts to go downhill. I'm just speaking as a YouTuber who's like, I want to make a good, high-quality set of 6 videos of cool things I find. And then by year 3 or 4, it's like, I'm going to bring my phone, and I'm just going to point it at something, and hopefully something good happens.
Driving into the studio on Monday before our flight, I honestly thought we were going to get there, and you were going to say, well, let's just not get on the plane.
Yeah, I've done that to various events in the past. I did not do that to CES. But you know what? We're here. We've seen some stuff. Austin, what's the best thing you've seen at CES 2020?
Oh, man. I mean, so there actually, it's been pretty good this year. Like, all joking aside, there's been a lot more stuff because I think the trend over the last few years has been CES has been kind of becoming less and less of an important show.
Yeah.
So many of the big OEMs have moved to their own separate events. And so a lot of times, especially the last 2 years, it kind of felt like it was just sort of the extra small, like, oh, here's a little interesting bit here or there. But this year, there's actually been some really cool stuff. So the Razer Tomahawk, I think, is probably top of mind.
Yeah.
It's a very cool concept. Have you seen it?
I watched your video on it because I was seeing a bunch of them in my sub box and I was like, I want to understand why this is cool. And I'm sure Andrew...
I missed this completely, actually.
Okay, so there's a very, very, very small shoebox size. Is that accurate?
10 liters. Yes.
10 liter piece.
Have you seen any of the external GPU like enclosures that
yes,
they make?
Yes, about the same size.
Almost the same size, but has a full computer with a full-size graphics card inside.
Okay.
So I hear that and I'm impressed by the tech that makes that happen, but I'm also like, how much does that matter that I can fit a whole PC into this tiny package?
I mean, it's cool. So the idea behind it is it supports not only a full-size graphics card and you have a small form factor power supply of up to 750 watts, but it takes advantage of the Intel NUC compute element, which is essentially a full PC motherboard on like, it looks like a graphics card. So it has a PCI slot on the bottom, but it has like a mobile Core i7, Core i5, or I think they go all the way up to Core i9. You put your memory in it, you put your SSD, it all kind of fits inside what literally looks like a graphics card. And then you slot it into the enclosure, slide it in, and that's your Razer Tomahawk.
You called it a daughter board?
Yes. Okay. So there's a couple of components. So it's especially on a podcast, it's hard to understand. But essentially, you've got a graphics card. You've got the NUC, which looks very much like a graphics card, just kind of a weirdly shaped one. They both slide into what looks like the world's simplest motherboard. It's just a little daughter board that connects the two.
Okay.
And then the entire thing gets plugged into a power supply and slides into a chassis, just sort of like with the same kind of handle, sort of like a Mac Pro or with their eGPUs. It's really cool, but it's also very expensive.
So, I mean, the NUC isn't expensive by itself,
but the whole thing.
Oh, it is.
No, it is. So, I did my video before knowing they wouldn't tell me price. Like, oh, you know, it's a thing that's coming. So, the downside is, I believe Intel announced that it is starting a little bit above $1,000 for the NUC, and that's for an i5. I think it's like $1,200 for the NUC with the i7. Then you have to buy the RAM, the SSD, and then your graphics card, and then you still need to get the actual Razer Tomahawk case.
So you have to really want your PC to be tiny, and you want to pay for it. All right, let me just zoom out for a second. CES in general, right? I think it officially stands for Consumer Electronics Show. Yes. Is that right? The types of things that we see at CES, since we mentioned at the top, like everything you start to see or you start to notice is that manufacturers will realize that they can just get more press if they hold their own event for new products. So whether it's Mobile World Congress or CES, these events get less and less major announcements and more just like, hey, we made this concept. We made this cool little side project. You should check it out. Pay attention to us for this week. We make cool tech stuff. And then they move on and make their real products later. That's, I think, the persistent theme for me for like the last 5+ years of CES. And that falls in line with even the coolest stuff I've seen at CES this year. So I like the Tomahawk. I'm going to go to Andrew. Do you have a favorite yet? We're halfway through it right now.
A favorite?
Yeah. Because we've seen now...
We haven't seen too much
we
yet.
We saw a little bit of the smartphone like display stuff. We saw there's always a ton of TVs. And now there's a whole bunch of these cars and these automakers that are like projecting their future of mobility onto the show floor, whether that's like a box with wheels and like no steering wheel or like an actual legit concept car. I have a picture of Sony's electric car pulled up on my iMac right now, and we can talk about that for a second because that came out of nowhere.
We went to the press conference, and yes, there were some rumors that there were going to be PS5 there. So we're like, oh, excellent. So they get up, and like 5 minutes in, they like start talking PlayStation, and we're all getting ready. We pull the cameras out. We're like, oh, they're about to drop PlayStation 5. Mm-hmm. And then they drop the logo and move on to their car.
That is so CES. That is so perfect. Because you know they're obviously going to have their own event for the PS5. Why the hell would they put it in CES, right? So they show up to CES. Everyone's like, why should we go to the Sony presentation? Here's what we'll do. We'll tease what they really want to see and then pivot right into just some like press show, which is what they did. But what they did is actually made a I don't know if I can call it a concept car or a one-off prototype, but they made a car. And the way Sony described it to me is it's a show of all the different hands we've had in car parts and making cars that you don't know about. So we just made a car to show you. So we have cameras in the side view mirrors because we make these Sony Alpha cameras and these CMOS sensors are great. And we tie that into the displays in the front and Sony makes screens. So now we have screens in the car. And you start to go through this whole list of things and it makes a lot of sense, but it's also now a car sitting in their booth.
It's also an incredibly good looking car.
I think so too. I wanted to ask about that. So I think I'm gonna make a bold take right here. It's the second best looking electric car here.
Okay, I was about to say what is number one?
Number one is a Tesla Model 3. And that's even bold.
Wait, when you say here.
And now I'm talking about like reasonable, like that exists. Like in January 2020, that exists. And I'm not talking about like the hypercars of like the Rimac Concept One or anything, but like as far as things that you would think about buying, you have the Ford Mach-E, you have the Tesla Model S, Model 3, Model X, Model Y, you have all these other electric, you have the I-Pace, you have the BMW i3, you have all these other electric cars, and then you have like the weird ones. This one looked better than all of those, I think. Mm-hmm. So as far as like sculpting whatever this body they made out of clay, and it's like the satin silver thing, we'll have a link in the show notes if you want to look at it, but I agree. I think it's the best looking electric car here.
It's just the most Sony thing ever to be like, oh, by the way, we just designed a car. You can't buy it. We were just showing this off. Like Sony makes everything. It's fine.
Yeah. I was talking about them because I was like, okay, so you can't buy this. So like, should I even ask you about the specs? And he was like, well, we'll tell you like it's quad motor and there's a 200 kilowatt hour battery and it's 0 to 60 in 4.6. And I was like, well, that sounds like you tested it and drove it. And they were like, well, we're going to be doing more of that later this year, but that's where we'll stop talking about it. I was like, wow. Okay.
I wish you should make concept videos. I'm like, this video is going to be great. We're never going to make the good video, but like, it's really good. Don't worry about it.
It's fascinating. Here's another one. And I think you saw this also was the OnePlus Concept One what it's called. What are your thoughts on this?
It's a very cool concept. So OnePlus, especially over the last, I mean, last year was a huge year. I mean, they're obviously the MKBHD smartphone of the year winner, which
two
I think is...
2 years running.
I think it's a really big idea.
It's a big deal. Sure.
They're obviously coming off of a really strong 2019.
Yeah.
And I think that going at that with a concept phone makes perfect sense, right? Because obviously they, all of these companies, OnePlus included, have a ton of really cool tech that they don't really show off. And obviously it's something that will come out at some point, but they've done a lot of work. So I guess we should kind of explain. So essentially what happens is that it's a feature actually taken from, it's the McLaren 720S.
The 720S correct? Is the first one that they had with this. And then the McLaren GT has this as well. Electrochromic tech in the roof.
Yes. So essentially what they're doing is, obviously, as smartphones get more and more cameras, especially you look at like the 7T, which I have sitting at the desk right now.
Wild the, back of that phone.
Look, it's, I like the phone. I don't like looking at that camera bump. It's just really ugly.
Yeah.
But the idea with this electrochromatic glass is that with the press of a button, essentially the entire thing can sort of tint and you won't really be able to see the cameras, which kind of makes it a much cleaner look on the back of the phone.
I really like the idea. And it took me a second to realize why, but in this world of like, all right, there's four cameras on the back, maybe next year we have five, the next year we have six. If we're never going to get to the point where we have enough space to put a physically zooming single lens, we're just going to keep adding cameras to the back of phones. So I don't know, why not just hide that area and put as many as you want? It doesn't have to look weird. So that's the like future vision of like why this could be applicable. But yeah, it did seem to work pretty well. They had the OnePlus 7T Pro basically like rocking that leather back and hiding the triple cameras. But you can imagine a world where there's like six back there and you don't see them.
And the other added benefit of some real functionality beyond just the looks is that it will function as an ND filter.
Right. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
And they only really showed like one instance of it where you open the camera, open pro mode, and you can turn it on or off. But that's like a video person's like dream. Like, wait, I could have ND built into, I don't even have that built into my cameras and the Red cameras. So that was cool to see.
If only they could spend some more R&D making those cameras behind the glass
really good.
Better.
That would be nice. All right, I want to ask about a gaming thing for you guys. And you've seen this, correct me if I'm wrong, Austin, but a Asus made a 360 hertz display.
It was like NVIDIA and Asus work together or something?
Actually seen a couple of crazy high refresh rate displays. So actually the first one we saw was at Razer. They have the new Razer Blade 15 and 17 at some point, I think in the first half of the year, have 300 hertz displays.
Wow, and a laptop.
Wait, and what? A laptop. Wow. Yes.
Did they just skip 240?
No, they actually have
240. They made a 240,
I missed that completely.
Yes. So they have 240 right now. They're upgrading that to 300. But then Asus is like, nah, that's not good enough. So they have a 360 frame per second display.
Okay, so here's my question. Because I'm an advocate of higher refresh rates, as you probably know, but that's in the smartphone world where everyone's at 60, right? So you can really tell the difference between 60 and 90, and I can tell the difference between 90 and 120, but like once you get to 120, great. Can you tell the difference between, let's say, 240, which is like the bleeding edge, you know, the high end stuff now, and 300 or 360 or even anything over that?
So I'm going to start by shamelessly shouting out a video we did like 5 years ago. I don't know if you remember, we did a video. I had a 144 hertz display in the office. And so I had you play like Minecraft locked at a bunch of different frame rates.
Did this?
Yes.
What?
You did this on my channel like 4 years ago.
Whoa. Okay. What happened?
I actually don't remember. I just remember I couldn't see much past 90. So the idea with the 360, the motion actually, so first, let me just start off. This is not a mainstream monitor by any stretch. It's a 24-inch 1080p monitor. It is exclusively meant for esports people who wish that they were good at video games.
Sure.
So the idea behind the 360 frames per second is less so for the pure motion, and it's more so for the clarity in the motion. I don't think anyone can really see a huge difference between 240 and 360.
Okay.
They had a really cool demo of text, or is a video game screenshot that was scrolling really quickly. And even though to like my eye, I couldn't really see any difference as far as the smoothness, but you could really see a clear difference in how sharp the text was and everything on screen was. Okay. So we were trying to figure out how to shoot it, because even with a slow motion camera, you really can't see. But by snapping a still, it's very, very clear that like the 240, even me, which is a very, very fast monitor, everything was super blurry. And with the 360, it was razor sharp.
Wow.
I am not a good enough gamer to really tell you how big of a difference it will really make, but I've got to say, like, you could definitely see a difference even from something like a 240 hertz display.
Okay.
I think you would need to be not just really, really good at games, but so deep into that specific game. Like, you look at Counter-Strike professionals, like, I'm sure that will make a difference for them because they've been playing this game nonstop for 10 years. They know exactly what it looks like, and then any little competitive edge they can get from something like that might be beneficial, but like you said, at 1080 and 24. That's like what a gamer's playing. Like
exactly.
Esports gamer is playing on. Yeah. And that's okay. That's got
to
be who it's for.
I could be swayed because before you guys talked about this, I was ready to make the comparison between like an amateur photographer buying a 1DX Mark III to get like 21 FPS instead of 16. Like how much better is that really? But you're right. When I'll relate it to when I shoot video and I'm doing like scrolling moves and I shoot my videos at 30 FPS, the correct frame rate.
Incorrect.
And, and you'll see like if you scroll too fast at 1/60 shutter speed, a little bit of tearing, a little bit of weird artifacts. So yeah, you do notice the difference when you're moving quickly in games. I guess that's the best case to notice a difference. Yeah. So, all right.
They're not done. So sort of a little birdie told me that they're actually still targeting at some point, mind you, not anytime soon, 1,000 hertz.
That's I was going to say that goal. As a joke.
I was going to say like 500 seems like a really cool number, but to just double that.
1,000 is the goal. I can't imagine what kind of PC you would need to smoothly run a game at 1,000. But to be fair, even though it supports 360, it has G-Sync involved. So even if you're like, you drop to 290 or whatever, you really won't notice much of a difference. It's still a lot of that is just how cleanly it's able to display those frames.
Right.
It's cool. It's just not something that mere mortals can actually really fully appreciate.
Yeah, that's fair. Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So are you having trouble getting your remote team organized and on the same page? Or for that matter, is your own desktop looking a little chaotic with a lot of tools and tabs? If any of that sounds familiar, then you may be interested in Coda. So Coda is an all-in-one collaborative workspace designed to bring teams and tools together for a more organized workday. So Coda blends the flexibility of docs, the structure of spreadsheets, and the power of applications, and the intelligence of AI to make work, well, less work. So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned by managing your planning cycles in one location while setting and measuring objectives for key results with full visibility across teams. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So if you want a platform that empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. So you can head over to coda.io/wave. That's coda.io/wave to get started for free. So coda.io/wave. Support for this show comes from NetSuite. Let's do some quick math. So the less your business spends on operations or multiple systems, the more margin you'll have, and that equals more money in your pocket. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, I mean, everything seems to cost more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. So NetSuite is a leading cloud financial system bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. And so you can reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. So you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. So head to netsuite.com/waveform. That's netsuite.com/waveform. netsuite.com/waveform. All right. Well, that's a lot of highlight stuff. I wanna spin wait, the other way.
Can I go one more? Since we're talking about gaming monitors
before we shoot.
Did you look at the Odyssey, Samsung Odyssey curved?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Okay. Oh, man. So first of all,
it's hard to describe.
It's gigantic.
It's super curved, right?
Yeah. It like looking at it from the back looks like it would physically wrap around your head. But when you go see it, this is my huge pet peeve. The whole thing is that it's 240 hertz, like gaming monitor, blah, blah. They're playing Overwatch on it, capped at 60 frames.
And Overwatch doesn't support a really wide field of view, right?
I mean, it looks stretched. It looks very stretched. But like, how do you go? And I didn't get a chance to ask the guy. I honestly don't think he would have understood what I was saying. But how do you put a gaming monitor on a CES floor for a bunch of tech people and cap it at 60?
That's insane.
And like a game that's so well optimized, I can't imagine a computer that
that demo would have looked way better at 240 hertz, right?
Unless maybe it's an early sample and they can't hit 240 smoothly.
That's very possible.
I don't know how I didn't think of that, but yeah, that seems very reasonable.
That's a big thing at CES. Is CES is basically a bunch of demos. You're walking around between a bunch of demos, and there's no way 100% of these demos are working flawlessly like they planned. you know, the way we set up a robot shot and we're like, the camera will do this and then it'll spin and it'll turn over. And then we start to put it together and we're like, the camera will just turn. This is the way a lot of these demos go. So you're probably right. There's probably some oops, we couldn't make it work perfectly happening.
Hopefully no one notices.
I think 50% of the videos I've shot this week were like of demos that failed and like, oh, sorry, hang on a second. They tried again. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I get it. These are all, because you were right earlier when you were talking about concepts, because I think that's definitely a major trend in the industry, is that before it's like, oh, look at this new product. It's coming out in a couple months. Now it's like, it's a concept. If you like it, we'll make it. Like, there's so much more of that sort of theoretical stuff, which I like. I like getting like a better sort of glimpse at, especially a lot of the foldables. Have you seen any of the foldable laptops? And
starting to see that stuff. Yeah.
Did you see the royal tree?
I was going to bring that up. I love that.
They made a tree?
It's just I love how bad the Royal FlexPi is. Like, it's so easy to trash on this phone because it's just horrible. And they came out at CES with the Royal FlexPi last year, and it was like, oh, you probably shouldn't make this, but like, cool proof of concept.
Made a great thumbnail.
Yeah, made a good thumbnail, right? And they, I have photos of it too, and like some clips for a video. But
it's a tree.
They made a, when I say a tree, I mean like a 15 to 18 foot tree just covered in these, instead of leaves, it's just FlexPis. I'm not even
like
joking.
Just the screen of it.
Just
yeah.
This
being blown by computer fans. Also,
is it because they didn't sell any FlexPies?
That was the, that's the caption to my upcoming tweet. Is look at all these Royal FlexPies we didn't sell. We made a cool tree out of them. Also, I just want to say I bought the Escobar Fold 1. I never got that phone. Just saying.
Wait, did you see that?
I did not.
Yeah, there's a phone. Tell me if you think this is sketchy at all. I bought a phone.
Okay.
By a relative of
Pablo his brother Escobar. Or cousin or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
which
great
brand.
Is
great brand.
Just a Royal FlexPi, but different color.
Yeah, it's gold.
And it was gold. It was $400, and I lost that money.
$400.
Yeah, I'm never seeing that again.
Isn't that cheaper than the actual FlexPi?
Yeah, that's yep. Yeah,
yeah. I have that email.
This is
receipt.
The Soldier phone all over again.
Oh, we'll just assume that's gone forever. No, I actually think I have a question. Do you think that that's something that some companies here are doing, where they're coming here with sort of concepts or ideas and legitimately testing the water and seeing the reactions to them and then moving based on what happens at CES?
Yes. So I actually had a conversation with a fairly big company today, and the guy pretty much straight up admitted that, like, look, we build these kind of prototypes day in and day out. Like, I mean, literally they'll have executives come through every few months. Like, look, there's 10 more things that we built.
Yeah,
do you like this? Do you like that?
Yeah.
But they were making a conscious effort to bring more of these out to the public, I think in large part because it's one thing to kind of pitch your boss on, hey, no, people are really gonna like this foldable like laptop or whatever. But it's another thing when you get, you know, real hype behind it, or on the flip side, you see, you know, you bring it out and everyone's like, oh, this is terrible. Yeah. It kind of helps them make more informed decisions. I actually legitimately do think that these concepts are not just here purely for marketing. There actually is some research and kind of seeing what people really kind of take on to with these things.
Yeah, I think that makes our job of critiquing them that much more important. I think it's so easy to come in here and point a camera at something and be like, look how crazy this thing is. It folds in half. Like, this is great. But, you know, take a second, like actually think, oh, well, maybe this is kind of an awkward form factor. Mm. Maybe they should change it in this way or that way and give like realistic feedback, because if you just pat them on the back, they're going to make a bunch more Royal FlexPis. We don't want that. So real feedback is important. I'll say that for sure. So the Ford has the Mach-E Mustang here at CES.
It's on a wall.
They have one on a wall. And I don't think that's a full weight car, but it is on a wall. And they have one in the booth. Do you like, I feel like it looks better in person than I've seen in any video. Is that wrong?
I agree. Yeah. No, I think it is still a little bit weird to me to call it a Mustang, but it
looks
good.
That's what everyone is saying. Yeah. So it was kind of funny. They were sort of explaining it around to people, and I'm overhearing it as we're getting shots of it. But it was funny that so many people didn't realize it was electric that the number one comment I heard was, wait, they made an SUV Mustang? Like, that was the first question is, wow, an SUV Mustang, that's weird. And then it was, oh, it's an electric car. Oh. And then there's this whole other question that comes like, well, how fast does it go? What's the range? But yeah, I was walking around it, and I do actually, I'm trying to work with Ford and see if we can make an autofocus episode on the model.
Oh, that would be good.
The Mach-E happen, because that's a really curious one for me. But I did see that, and that looked pretty cool. Not as good looking as Sony's electric car, but I did like to see that in person. That was pretty solid.
I saw a crazy stat, and I don't know if it's true, but I actually think it was related to the Mach-E launch. It was something like 45% of Americans still don't understand that an EV doesn't take gas. And the fact that you put that Mustang sort of badging on it, they're going to have an hill battle.
That's, I think that's why that you have to put the Mustang name on it, because
you think so?
Yeah, because what do people know about like Ford really? Like they know about the F-150, they know it's a pickup truck. They know about the Mustang, they know it's a great sports car that people love. So if you're gonna try to accelerate like your move into this electric car world, you got to put something people already know about alongside it at least.
Yeah.
So if you put that Mustang name on it, I know it's an SUV and that's another dimension to consider, but like now people are like, oh, a new Mustang. Let's see what's different about this Mach-E Mustang. And then they, you know, that they open that door into the electric car world. I think it would be smart of others. I think Audi kind of did the same thing with the, what did they call it? The Quattro, but like the e-tron?
E-tron, yeah.
E-tron Quattro. They had some branding on it that was similar to some other SUVs or some other S sedans they've done. And I think that's smart for them to do. That sort of brings new customers and existing customers to the same place.
Things are moving very quickly. It's interesting at how CES over the last few years has got a very, very large sort of focus on automotive. Like yeah. It used to not really be. Like I remember those early days when we used to go to CES, the automotive section was like stereos. Now it's like electric cars everywhere.
It was fascinating. I did a best cars of CES video. I don't know how many years ago this was. This must have been like 5 years ago, something like that. And it was just like sports car, sports car, sports car, F1 car, giant pickup truck, yacht, Lamborghini, yacht. Sports car. Like it wasn't really like something you would ever try to, you know what I mean? Like it's not cars people are buying.
Right.
And now you look around CES and like there's still a lot of that. There's still like, look at this crazy stereo, look at these wild new tires that never run flat. But like then there's, you know, Ford trying to introduce their electric car to the world. And that's like a real thing that's happening.
Speaking of automotive, did you guys see that Toyota is building a city?
No.
I could see. Break this down. Because what?
This sounds like an Elon kind of thing.
I am being 100%.
This is amazing.
I'm being 100% serious.
Okay.
They have I believe it's an old factory. It's in Japan. It's like right beside Mount Fuji. And so they basically, it's like 175 acre sort of zone. They're basically tearing the whole thing down and building like straight up like a future utopia. So it is fully all the streets and stuff they're rebuilding. So there's essentially like three different sort of setups. So it's fully autonomous. There's no like normal cars allowed on the street.
Oh my God.
They have their e-pilots that will be driving around all over the place. The entire like underground of the city will be full of like hydrogen. They're building all the buildings out of like wood. It's completely insane.
So is this like the world's largest concept car? Is this like, this is what we need the future to look like. If only everyone else would play along, they'd see how great this could be. Is that what this is?
Yeah, pretty much. They're going to, I believe the number is 2,000 people are going to have living in this city.
Whoa. Is there details on this? Like can I live in this city?
They were saying that some of it obviously will be Toyota employees and they're going to have some of the offices that will be, you know, obviously they're working on, you know, whatever electric stuff or whatever it is that they're working on, but they're going to have people like they were straight up saying like, yeah, we want people who are like retired, people who are like scientists, engineers, essentially people who want to live the good life.
Okay. If they throw in gigabit internet, I feel like it's pretty safe. Yeah. I mean, that's a guarantee, right? 5G is probably just like hovering around there. I would live in a city like this just to make the point that this is the way of the future.
It's not a concept. They're breaking ground in next year. That's like this is a real thing that they are actually doing.
Now they have to spend a ton of money to do this.
Yes.
I'm assuming a lot of money.
Cities, not exactly cheap.
Yeah. But then you end up with, so now there's like, okay, is there a mayor? Is there an infrastructure? Is there like a census? Okay. Is there
taxes? I actually don't know if it's a real city.
Okay, I was going to say.
Because it's a 175 acre campus, which is large, but it's not city big necessarily.
It'll be a campus is what it'll be.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's cool though.
I still love that idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you're talking like automotive. We've come a long way at CES as far as announcements.
That's pretty awesome. Well, you know what? I think that's a great place to leave it. We talked through the good. The bad we don't have to hit on so hard. I mean, I've talked about the FlexPy enough for the last 24
it's the only bad thing at CES, hours. For sure.
It's quite the highlight. But Austin, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely.
To talk about CES. And we'll come back after the break and chat it up a little more.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again, and I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Support for Waveform comes from 1Password. So it's hard to come up with a totally unique password every time you need one, but it's what you gotta do to stay secure. Luckily, a password manager makes creating and tracking your passwords completely painless. So 1Password combines industry-leading security with award-winning design to bring its users private, secure, and user-friendly password management. And it does that by generating as many strong, unique passwords as you need, and then securely storing them in an encrypted vault that only you have access to. With 1Password, you just need to remember one strong account password and it'll protect everything else from your logins, your credit cards, notes, office Wi-Fi, etc. You no longer need to keep a bunch of sticky notes all over your desk or reuse the same password over and over again. I've tried out 1Password. As you know, I switch between devices and phones constantly, and so using 1Password to just fill out things quickly and log into a whole bunch of stuff makes switching between devices a lot easier, so I'm all good to go once I sign in. So right now, our listeners can get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/waveform. That's the number 1Password.com/waveform for 2 free weeks. So 1Password.com/waveform.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, we're back. So in the time it took you to listen to that ad, believe it or not, we flew all the way back from Las Vegas after our last day of CES, all the way back to the studio. How are you feeling?
Good so far, but I don't even want to say that out loud.
Don't jinx it too hard.
I'm jinxing it really hard. I feel like the next 3 days are just like every sniffle is going to be like, oh no, the flu is coming.
CES flu, don't want to get it. No, I feel pretty okay right now. I also am kind of proud of my, I'm going to check exactly how many steps I took.
Today or yesterday?
Yesterday.
Yesterday was, so for those of you who don't know, we recorded the bit with Austin on Tuesday night. It is now Thursday night back at the studio. So yesterday was, we just spent the entire day on the floor.
In that entire day, I took 14,797 steps. That's actually really? Not my highest ever number from CES, but that's pretty good.
I was going to say, I assumed to be lower because you went out, but I actually hit 15,800 because nice. I made a secondary Taco Bell trip while you were gone.
Nice. Okay. So now that we're back, it seems like appropriate to just wrap it all up. And I said this when we were with Austin, but this is actually one of my, not favorite ever, but one of the better CESs for me that I've had. I'm curious if you have any highlights or things that stood out to you for your third CES. Maybe give me like a top two best of CES.
Sure.
What just strikes you?
I think I'm going to, maybe instead of two, I'm just going to wrap up as my like my one thing that I thought CES really had that impressed me was just, I really think that we've made this big stride into like smart homes and smart home products and stuff like that. And I know we have all the little things like lights and, you know, smart outlets and stuff like that. And that's smart all really easy.
Smart speakers.
Yeah. Yep. Well, smart speakers are what is letting us dive head first into this so
They're
much
the
quicker.
Hub. Yes.
Yeah. Like it used to suck. If you had lights, just have to turn it on with your phone every time. Now being able to not do that is so much better. So I think the fact that like Google Home Assistant and Alexa Mini or whatever are so cheap, everyone can start creating a smart home now.
That's the gateway.
Yeah, but CES was like, oh my God, we're looking at the future.
Okay.
So, I mean, the first thing I thought of, which wasn't future, was I saw there's an Instapot with Google Assistant that I'm really excited for.
As silly as it sounds, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, like I hear it like steaming in the other room and I know it has to get turned off so it can let all the pressure out, and I'd rather just not get off my couch. Yeah. And then, because you have to wait another 30 minutes after anyways. But the LG booth was just like, it has its cool TVs and everything, but the rest of their smart home stuff was kind of crazy.
They had a lot of smart home demo stuff going on. And I think we did, during that little booth tour, we saw some like really intricate stuff. And I don't know how much of it is going to end up actually shipping or in products, or if this is future vision stuff, or as we said, CES is just a cool demo.
Yeah.
But it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it like started kind of basic, which is like that smart oven, which is, to me, it was really cool because it had two separate doors so you can control two different temperatures in the oven, and then you can still control the stovetop over Wi-Fi, I think it had. Just like imagine every time you thought you left the stove on and being able to be like, I know I didn't.
It's great, and I think that's awesome. And the first time that ever has a bug and gets it wrong, that's going to be a massive problem.
That could be not great.
Yeah.
What else did that? We saw the smart refrigerator with its Kraft ice.
Kraft ice.
Yeah.
Circular ice.
Do you remember how long he told us it takes to make the ice?
Yeah. When we went through that demo, he showed us the refrigerator that made the circular ice. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, he said you could make 3 circles of ice in 18 to 24 hours.
Yep.
So that means if you're trying to make a dozen ice globes, it's going to take you about a week.
Something
a whole
nutty,
a whole work week.
If you're having a party where everyone's drinking whiskey and wants their Kraft ice, you better get
only the people you really like are gonna get those.
Yeah, right. And then I think like the craziest thing they had in terms of smart home stuff, which I don't see us seeing easily in the next 10 years, probably 20 years, they had like a smart door. Imagine like for everyone listening, imagine almost like frosted glass door that has touchscreen essentially built into it, and then has a door handle that can read your, no, it wasn't fingerprints, it was Vane ID, right? Remember the G8 with its Vane ID? Mm-hmm. So it could read that, you could let people in through that, you could do a couple other things, but then it also has this like cabinet to the side of it that you can access indoors and you can access outdoors. So if a delivery man comes, he can scan the package, put it in the door so no one steals it, but it'll also refrigerate it if it needs to be refrigerated.
There's a smart fridge built into your door.
Yeah.
So if you get a refrigerated package, you can have them put it in the refrigerator and never have it lose. I get Blue Aprons every week. I feel like that would actually be a legit use of it.
It was one of those things where you're like, this is so cool, but no part of me wants to be excited because I don't think I'll see this anytime soon. By the time this comes out, I will have forgot about it already.
Fair. Yeah. I think all of this sort of wraps up and ties into my takeaway from CES, which I actually tweeted this earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
Before CES, I think I tweeted this, is tech is so great when it works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it comes down to, because there's all these cool demos at CES. And if you go back and look at that smart door, like, all right, let's say someday, you know, Alexa and Google Home and Siri and, you know what, Bixby, they all talk perfectly with this smart door, and the whole world can get this smart door. And it's inexpensive, and they install it, and every time the delivery guy walks up to your house with the Vane ID, it works perfectly, and he puts it in the correct place every time, and no one ever steals the package. In that world where the tech works, it is awesome.
Yeah.
That is an awesome place. Mm-hmm. Maybe I want to live in that city.
Going around the LG booth made me remember Austin talking about this Toyota city, and I'm like, all of this stuff only seems possible in something like that, where like everyone's,
it's
got to
be
insane smart.
It's got to be pretty future looking, even in a world where you have a, what is it, a poop robot? Little,
oh man, we didn't never
delivery. We never got to find it.
I think I found the booth it was in as we were on our way back, and it was CES is like expanded into the Sands and the Venetian and everything, and you have to go to different ballrooms for meetings and stuff. I didn't realize they had a ton of booths at the Sands, not just meeting ballrooms, so we didn't get a chance to go over there.
A lot of discreet stuff out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we, in a dream world, like even that works perfectly, where you're sitting there realizing you don't have all the toilet paper you need, and you just say the magic phrase, hey Bixby, get me some toilet paper, and it rolls over and knocks on the door and brings it in. So yeah, tech is awesome when it works, and I think we start to see like the separation between how good tech can be in our ideal worlds versus how good it is now, and we're just trying to bridge that gap, trying to make things better. all over the place. And that's not to say that the future is impossible. I think we can still dream and get to this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a long time before
I just think, yeah, the stuff you see at CES is just so far out. It's funny, the people working on it might like barely even be able to see it really come to fruition. And
yeah,
that's really grim. I'm sorry.
It's also kind of interesting because, and this is a total coincidence, the night that we're recording this is the 13th anniversary of the unveiling of the first iPhone.
Really?
So it wasn't a September thing. I just found this on Twitter. It was like right now, Steve Jobs unveils the iPhone to the world. And you think of like the big type of like unveiling, like dramatic product, like the way people must have thought about it back then, like, oh, this is crazy. This is going to be a long time before this catches on, but hopefully it, you know, has a good first year. And now the world a decade later has never been the same.
Like, yeah.
Everyone
we're literally reading the script off our phones right now because neither of us decided to set up a laptop after getting off the flight.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. 13 years ago, we
world
saw
was
like,
a different place, man.
Wow.
So yeah, tech is great. When it works, it's kind of embarrassing and funny when it doesn't work. There are demos all over the place.
That's usually the best part of CES is just watching things fail miserably.
Yeah. And I want to be optimistic because, like, I feel bad because obviously people are out here setting up the ideal demo and, oh no, there's Wi-Fi interference. Oh no, this knocking on the refrigerator isn't lighting it up. What's going to happen? What's going wrong? But, you know, it's still kind of interesting to see the difference between the things that work really well and the things that are like really far out in the future. But that's my takeaway from CES.
Yeah. Did you have any products or anything that you specifically, you mentioned it in your video. If you haven't got a chance, we did a dope tech of CES that is all the really like eye catching stuff. You got to rematch Omron ping pong robot.
I did. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The robot was reading my emotions to try to not get me too mad while it improved my backhand. And you know what I actually noticed?
What's that?
While I was playing the robot and I was hitting it back and forth and like just trying to hit the table basically and see how well it does, it started like, I guess because I was smiling during this and I was hitting a lot of backhands, no matter where I hit it, it would always start to hit it back to my backhand side. And I could see it very deliberately hitting it back to my backhand side, no matter what I did.
That's amazing.
And I was like, it's really honing in on this backhand. Like it's learning fast. And then I put on a frown and it started hitting it back like a normal way.
You're coercing the robot to do different things. When she first came up to us and said, oh, it's different. I said, oh, we've done a video on it. And she's like, oh, no, but now it reads emotion or it has emotions.
Yeah.
Or reads
emotional intelligence.
Yeah. I was like, she's like, oh, yeah, it'll figure out how you feel and then respond to that. I was like, so it trash talks? She's like, no, it helps you. I was like, oh man.
It should trash talk.
Way better. If it
trash talking robots, CES 2021. I'm here for that.
I want to just see it lay the smackdown on people who wait in line to play it. And
I hope that robot trash talks next year. They should bring it. Omron, if you're listening to this, trash talk is the next improvement to your AI.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to wrap up this fun second episode of 2020 with what I actually mentioned in the end of my wrap up of CES, which are like my three big takeaways.
Okay.
One, and you can give me reactions to these if you agree. I think number one, 8K is nowhere near mass adoption. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I think I said that in our first episode, actually. Yeah.
But 4K is at least, it's a minimum to be at CES.
Yeah.
Like you're not showing 720p or 1080p
stuff. I don't think I saw a single 10, or I think the only 1080 thing we heard about was like the 360Hz monitor, which is, okay, you can be
makes
1080
sense.
For that.
Sure, yeah. And we really saw a lot of different technologies. We saw OLED, we saw QLED, we saw HDR stuff everywhere, and that was more of what differentiated inside of 4K.
Yeah.
And that was cool to see. So that was my number one takeaway. Number two was you can put Alexa in anything.
Yeah.
And they made a big push at CES this year. Amazon was everywhere. Some things that I did see with Alexa in them were a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
The Huracan.
I liked that one. It's like, Amazon's so affordable. Put it in your Lamborghini.
I actually don't know what you can do with Alexa. Just unlock the doors, probably.
I hope you can set up launch control with it.
Oh my God. Alexa, drive me to work. I mean, that's, again, you don't know what the future is of that, but they did have an Alexa enabled Lamborghini sitting there. They had appliances, of course. They had the TVs. Like you said, you could put it in a toaster. You could put it in a hot pot?
Instant pot.
Instant pot.
I kept thinking to myself, like, how many things can assistants go in? And everything I thought of was kitchen related. That really seems to be, I think if we're talking about the first rooms that are just going to be completely like Wi-Fi connected and smart, is the kitchen. There's too many appliances.
There's a future somewhere in like 2029 where you walk into a room and say, Alexa. and like 75 things light
water
up.
Water starts boiling, the oven preheats. Yeah, the knife gets sharpened.
The knife starts glowing in the corner. Like,
I've never been more excited.
Yeah, so that's, you can put Alexa in anything. That's my takeaway. Mm. And last but not least, like, I mean, this is, CES is still fun. Like this,
yeah.
The show had its own trajectory. I've, like I said a million times, I've been to CES many years, and you sort of see CES becoming this show where, oh, car stuff is becoming more important and the smartphone stuff is becoming less important and all the things are ebbing and flowing. But at the end of the day, there's crazy stuff at CES every year. And where else are you going to play ping pong against a robot and then 5 minutes later race in a racing simulator against a bunch of people in the cloud and then play Counter-Strike at 300 hertz like all in the same day?
Yeah,
like,
right. That was literally 20 minutes that we did all of that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think CES is fun. I'll go back next year if you will.
I think I'm forced to, but I mean, that's my job. But yeah,
sick.
I'm definitely down to go as long as I don't get sick this year.
Perfect. Well, that's the plan. Either way, that's been it. Thanks for listening to this second episode of 2020. If you have any other things you want us to talk about, or if you just have suggestions for the next episode or questions, you already know where to get at us. It's usually Twitter at WVFRM. And that's been it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Waveform is brought to you by Studio 71, and we actually want to give a special shout out to Mark, who works there. He has been editing our last two episodes while we were out at CES. He's come in super clutch, getting it done on time at crazy hours. So thank you, Mark. We really appreciate it. And our intro outro music is brought to you by Cameron Barlow.